Right now, though, here on WICC, the Voice of Connecticut on Newsline, we want to turn our attention to the topic of college and, well, getting your kid into a good college, right? And joining us live from letstalkcollege.org, Priyanka Shingala. Priyanka, so happy to have you here today.
Thank you for having me on.
And, you know, I saw this. I got an email from the Wilton Library that said that you were making an appearance. And I know you're also making an appearance, I hope I have this right, at the library in Reading, the Mark Twain Library. Is that happening this week, today?
Yes, that's happening today. So we're talking about the SAT versus ACT today. And then next Tuesday, I believe, on the 15th, we're talking about the entire college applications timeline. So what do you do and when?
There's so much to talk about. Now, I have full disclosure. I've been through this with my three children. Every experience was different. But getting information from somebody like you is really so helpful to help you organize it and help you realize what are really the most important things to be looking at. Okay, so let's talk first of all about the SATs and the ACTs. And my big question is, do colleges still want to see those scores? There was a time during the pandemic, I guess, when they dropped it, right? Or said that they were optional. And some, I remember a friend said to me, optional, schmoptional. They still want to see it, even if they say they don't. First of all, Priyanka, what's the deal? Do they still ask for this?
Yes. So the clear-cut answer is yes, because more and more universities have actually been rolling back their guidelines to the pre-COVID guidelines, which is test required. So now there's really, it's going to be hard for you to create your list of 8 to 12 final universities to apply to that are all test optional. It's just not really a thing anymore. So if you're thinking, should I test, should I not test? The answer is yes, you should prep, you should test, you should do your best in every way possible to do well on this.
Right. It's such a tough, I think kids would love to think that they're off the hook when it comes to SATs and ACTs because it's a tough time, right? Junior year, senior year, it's so, so busy for them, right? And then they're worried about their GPA. They're worried about extracurricular. And then they have to add onto their plate doing these practice tests. Okay, let's break it down a little bit. First of all, what is the best way to divine whether your child should be taking the SATs or the ACTs? I had one SAT and two ACTs test takers in my family.
Okay. So first up, before you ever, and one of the mistakes I should start with is that most families think, oh, you know what, we're going to sign up for both, and then my kid will prepare for both. And that is an awful strategy because both things are just different enough that there's different strategies involved. So now you're almost, the ACT as an example, is a time constraint exam. You have more questions and less time for that exam. And then the SAT, you have about a minute or a minute, a little bit more than a minute per question. So just by that, we're not even talking topics, but just even with the time strategies, it's different. So the first thing you can do is figure out which exam you want to take, because any university that accepts one exam accepts the other. So play to your strengths. Now, how can you do that? Well, first up, I recommend that students just take a free SAT through a marketing company. And a couple that I usually say, go to the local, you know, the test prep companies or like the Princeton Review or something online, that they offer you free SAT, free ACT. And then once you've done the entire mock exam, see which exam you do better on. So to give you some...
And Priyanka, I just want to jump in. Don't schools, I feel like my kids did pre-tests at their schools as a way of determining whether they were better suited for the SATs and ACTs. Will you get that at a public school, or do you need to do it a different way?
So usually with schools, PSATs are the most common, but that's really more of the practice SAT version, right? And depending on what grade you're in, you're really not going to get close to the actual SAT until your junior year. And that's really cutting it close to when I usually recommend students start, which is prepare before junior year. But you don't do the ACT. So in schools, depending on where you live, so in Connecticut, we're more leaning towards SAT. So we don't really see ACTs happening in schools or pre-ACTs happening in schools.
Interesting.
So you wouldn't get exposure. Yeah.
Why is it that way in Connecticut?
It's not just connected. It's sort of a SAT, so is by College Board, and ACT is by ACT Inc., and they're both educational nonprofits, and they're technically competitors, but it really, their marketing is really where it's at. So what happens is in the state of Connecticut, Connecticut is one of the few states that's partnered with College Board, just as an example, to give out free SATs to all public school juniors. But we don't have that same option from the ACT. So by default, anyone who is in a public school system is automatically thinking, hey, we're getting that free SAT in March or April of junior year. So therefore, we should already be prepping and thinking SAT, not really ACT.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, yeah, I mean, you want to figure out early on what tests you're better at taking, right? The rap, or the rep, I should say, of ACTs used to be that they were better for kids maybe who were sprinters, you know, who didn't want to take as long a test. And the rap was also that they were more science-oriented. Either of those still true?
Okay, so first up with the let's talk the differences. That was a reputation. That was definitely a reputation when I was back in high school and testing. But then the SAT has changed twice since then. So in the last 10 years, we've had two changes to the SAT. So now, compare and contrast with the ACT. At ACT, just when looking at, let's say, the math section, you have precalculus and trigonometry. Both of those topics are not on the SAT, not in the level of depth that they are in the ACT. Then the second is the science, as you just mentioned. Now, the science is not really science-based. No students really need to know or have your fundamentals in science cleared up. You don't have to remember the biology you did in ninth grade. Instead, that science section is really a visual-based section. So the left side of the page is experiments, chart descriptions, charts, like descriptions, tables, graphs, all of this. And on the right side of the page, you have those 5 to 7 questions based on that. And students tend to struggle with this just because, as I mentioned earlier, it's a time constraint exam. So it takes a while to go back and forth, matching the information from table one to the chart two or whatever it is, and making sure you pick the right answer. So it's really an extended reading section. It's not a science section.
I'm getting a headache thinking about what they would be like to take that test. But as you say, it's not based on a particular school curriculum. It is right. Okay. All right. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. And Priyanka, you touched on this, and I thought it was interesting that you said you really need to get going on this before your junior year, huh? Before your junior year. Well, you know, I would have thought that junior year was good enough, or some people push it to late junior year.
I know. And that is one of the most common mistakes I see and the advice I hear, which is because, as I mentioned, that we have that free SAT that happens in March or April of junior year. Most students look at that and say, that's going to be the first time I take the test. We'll see how I do in March. So you may or may not even have prepped at that point. So you're just going to see how you do, and then we'll take it seriously in May and June. But the issue with that is in May, you have AP exams. The SAT, as an example, is in the first Saturday of May, and your AP exams are the first 2 weeks of May. So you're not really studying for the SAT. You're too busy studying for your APs. And then in June, well, that's when we close out the school year. So then you have your finals, and depending on how many snow days we've had, we might be in finals week right then and there. You might be just rushing to get their grades in, essays, projects, et cetera. So once again, are you really putting your best effort in if you're waiting until that time period to start your test prep?
Right.
So instead, I usually, and before I even get into it, your scores are valid for 5 years, okay?
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Right. So that means I usually tell students, hey, start and put in everything you can in terms of effort in the summer between 10th and 11th grade. That is the freest summer you're going to have, because after that, the summer between 11th and 12th, if you leave your SAT prep to that, we're working on your college essays. We're working on maybe finalizing your college list. Maybe you're going on a few tours. There's too much to do to then tack on this extra bit of testing.
That is so true. So true. Right. But you know you're going to get groans from the kids saying, I'm not going to spend my summer between 10th and 11th grade studying. But that sounds like a really good idea, because also you could take the test and not do mm-hmm. well and want to have the time to take it again, mm-hmm. right?
And that's the thing, is that these exams, whichever exam you end up with, SAT or ACT, you have the opportunity, and again, I'm just going to use SAT as an example because it's just easier to explain on a call without getting everything mixed up with the names. But let's say SAT as an example. If you prep over the summer, there's an SAT available in August, and that is the last Saturday of the month. Usually, that's the weekend before most high school students start school. So you could have taken your first exam, however you might have done, but at least your first take is done before you ever walked into school. Then there's another one available in October, November, and December, and those are the first Saturdays of the month. Realistically, and again, I usually recommend no more than 3 retakes, but you could be done with the takes and retakes before the holiday break. Right. And then when you have your free SAT in March, that's just an added bonus. It's not, hey, this is when I'm starting.
Right. Sounds like a smart strategy. Oh, my goodness. I have so many more. I wish I talked to you before my kids went through the process. We are talking all things college applications today with Priyanka Shingala of letstalkcollege.org. And we're taking your calls, too, 203-333-9422. Maybe you have a college-bound student and have some questions. Priyanka, this is such terrific information. And as we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, you've been making appearances throughout Connecticut, Reading today, and there's a whole schedule. And I have that website correct, right? Letstalkcollege.org. Is there an apostrophe in the let's?
No, not for the website.
Okay.
For the business, yes, not for the website.
All right. Okay. So just letstalkcollege.org. Super helpful. We've been talking about the SATs and the ACTs, and colleges want them again. So then you have to figure out what your kid is best at, and then when to start, which you told me you got to do it early. You have to try to really get prepped that summer between 10th and 11th grade. Sounds like a great strategy. Let's talk a little bit about this. How should a student prep, right? It used to be there were some prep classes offered through your school. Children with means are able to hire mm-hmm. private tutors. If you mm-hmm. don't have the means, or if you're, mm-hmm. you just, your family does not want to spend the money on that, what's the mm-hmm. best way to prep?
Okay, so one of the best ways to prep for the SAT is via Khan Academy. And a few years back, Khan Academy and College Board, which is the creator of the SAT, they partnered together to basically bring access to SAT prep to everyone of every kind of demographic background. So it was a way to just say, hey, look, here are the questions that exist. Here are the topics we need to cover. And I have met students, siblings of my former students, who've gotten to the 1400s or 1500s out of that full 1600 perfect score. So that is helpful, right? But of course, the one thing to note is that there's going to be accountability required, because whether that's the student tracking themselves, whether that's a parent saying, hey, did you go and do these practice questions, and so on. So Khan Academy is a great free resource. And because they partnered with College Board, you get actual SAT questions for practice. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can always go to College Board, and they have 6 practice SATs available right now. So that's also an option. But of course, if you want the prep to go with it, then head over to Khan Academy. Then for ACT, you can just go to the ACT.org. And they have a little bit of their own prep set as well available. So it's not as robust as the Khan Academy, but it is a great start for somebody who's trying to figure out what kind of topics they need to work on. And then, of course, you can figure out where your holes are and then head over to Khan Academy and do the subject tutoring aspect from Khan Academy.
So, you make it sound like fun, Priyanka. I don't know.
What? That's fun.
Yeah. Well, I guess what you're saying is there's no substitute for taking the tests, right? I seem to recall that. It was just a matter of, instead of studying, saying, let me bone up on my vocabulary or my math equations or whatever, it's getting to know how to take that test and getting faster at it, right?
So it's one of the things when I used to do test prep is first accuracy. So you need to get better before you get faster, because if there's no point in me telling you to get faster if we're just getting to the wrong answer faster. So get better first and then speed it up. But you do need to know your content. And SAT, especially as of this past March, does have vocabulary on it. So for all the parents of current junior or sophomores and juniors, yes, students need to study vocab again. And I cannot emphasize that enough, because right now I've run into students who look at a couple of words and are like, I didn't know which answer to pick because I don't know what any of those answer choices mean. So just don't let yourself be in that situation.
Yeah.
But yes, overall.
That's tough. That's tough to catch up on the vocabulary. I always sounded like a broken record with my kids. I'm like, the best way to have a good vocabulary is just to read a lot and look up words as you go. But I guess young minds are able to absorb word definitions and memorize them and do it that way.
No matter which way you pick, just make sure you take the vocab seriously. That's all. That's basically the one advice I can give, because a lot of students just blow over it and are like, "Ah, it's not important." No, it is. It is important. You'll lose points if you don't know your vocab.
I believe it. Yeah. how many times? This is a tough one, and I'm sure it's different for every student. But how many times should you take the SAT or the ACT? Again, I remember with my kids. They got to maybe two or three tests, and I remember my daughter saying, it's not going to get better. I'm not taking it again. This is what it is, and I'm happy with my score, and let's just go with this.
You know, honestly, your daughter actually mentioned a really good point, which is after the two or three takes, she basically just said, I'm not going to get any better, and that's the law of diminishing returns. So I do say, you know what, max cutoff is three times. It doesn't matter if the university says only send us your highest and they'll never know if you took the test 10 times, which is called score choice. So if they just say, hey, send us your highest of reading and highest of math and we'll super score it, great. But when students take the exam, usually more than three times, definitely more than four times, at that point, they're not really improving. So they're just going in circles. They're basically bashing their heads against their desk, trying to get that 10-point, 20-point, 30-point improvement. It's better to do the three takes, prepare for them. If you need to space those takes out so you can prepare well for them, go for it. But I would say three is just a good cutoff.
Okay. Wow. All right. She was right. She's a smart cookie. I knew that. But yeah, she was right about that. Okay. Glad to hear that. So Priyanka Shingala, we've been talking about college and about the SATs and the ACTs, and I didn't even get the chance to talk to you about the all-important college essay. I'm hoping you'll come back and we can talk about that another time in between your many appearances here at local Connecticut libraries. Again, today, the Mark Twain Library over in Reading. I haven't been there yet. It looks so beautiful. Got to get over there. Letstalkcollege.org. Priyanka Shingala, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. We'll hope to talk with you again very soon right here on WICC. Joining us live is travel expert Mark Elwood. Mark, hello, old friend. I am so happy to be back with you on the radio.
Me too. And I'm sorry we're talking about such serious things to begin with, but it is very important. I think Milton, anyone going to Florida at the moment or with Florida in their sights, must be very anxious about it all.
Absolutely. And Mark, what would your advice be if you had planned a trip, say, between now and the weekend or something, you wanted to go to Florida, you wanted to fly, what is the first best thing to do?
Well, don't do it, first of all. Even if the airports were open and most of them are closed, remember, by going, you're essentially making yourself another problem for the emergency services if you get marooned there. So if you're not in the area, don't contribute to the problem by adding yourself to the mix. Also, don't worry. In situations like this, airlines is what's known as a waiver. And you'll usually get a text or an email about this. And that essentially says, for certain dates, usually the ones in the crosshairs of something like a storm, you can change your flight, no penalty, no fee, no nothing. We'll rebook you on another date so you can go when things are a little less hairy. So you're not sort of on the spot completely.
So they want you to change your plans. They don't want you down in Florida right now,
exactly.
Sounds like. Are there any concerns about price gouging among the airlines, that anybody would take advantage of a situation like this? And, oh, you had to cancel your flight, but, look, you can get this flight for just a little bit more.
I love the way you think. Historically, the airlines did get their knuckles wrapped quite a long time ago when it looked like they were doing that. Frankly, they couldn't cope with the bad PR of the amount of money they'd make out of that. You'll find now, I think American has laid on some extra flights so that more people can get out of the seemingly affected or soon to be affected area. They're making sure that there'll be seats for everyone. I wouldn't worry particularly that they're going to gouge you. You may see higher prices, but again, get on the phone to them or use X or Twitter, reach them through social media and ask about that. They don't want to be accused of gouging in an emergency. It's not worth the amount of money they'll make. So if it looks like the price is a little insane, ask them nicely and see if they perhaps mispriced it.
I guess my mind works somewhat cynically, having been in the news business for a number of years, Mark. I can't help myself. The other real concern, though, I guess, is that just a huge number of flights will be canceled or delayed. In other words, even if you didn't have a flight into Fort Myers or Tampa or something, it just has this domino effect, right?
Exactly. I mean, what we always have to remember is that the plane you're supposed to fly on is flying other legs very, very tightly beforehand. There's not much slack in the system. I always like to check where my plane is right now before a flight. There are different ways you can do that. You can go to flightaware.com, the website. That will usually show you, close enough to your departure time, it will show you where the aircraft you're supposed to be currently is. I've talked about an app and a web app and a mobile app called Flighty. I love it. That also does the same thing. So if you want to anticipate there being a problem with your plane, with your flight, find out where your plane is. And you can see that, gosh, that plane is not going to make it back in the next 5 hours. I'm probably going to have a problem. And if you anticipate issues, they're way, way less problematic to deal with than if you're caught right at the 11th hour.
Well, that is smart advice. And if you are flying somewhere over the next several days, say, I mean, don't forget, we're still probably catching up from Helene, right? I've always heard this advice that if you are flying, your flight hasn't been canceled, but you're a little concerned about it, and in addition to checking with those apps, you say that's a great idea. Is it a good idea to just try to get that early flight, get out before things get backed up, stacked up?
It is always, remember, the one time planes are left idling, they're not in the air, is often overnight. So typically, you will know the night before whether your plane is sitting at the gate for that 7 a.m. flight. So if in doubt, yes, absolutely, first flight of the day. Of course, problems can happen. Maybe a storm rolls in at breakfast time. You can't guarantee the first flight will take off. But if the plane has been idling there for 12 hours at the gate, you know that it's not going to get delayed en route to your takeoff. So, yeah, that's why the first flight of the day is usually the safest bet. But some people aren't morning people, and it's not worth the pain of taking that to get up before.
Yeah, I like to fly early. just get it over with, get on the plane, have a little nap, and just quit your complaining about getting up early. The other thing about Florida right now, if you had to go... I remember we were in a situation once we missed a flight in Naples and we wound up driving across Florida and catching a flight back to New York from an East Coast airport. But it sounds like that is just, as you say, just like don't fly into Florida at all. Don't think about doing some sort of creative trip with, you know, different airports that might be open. Just don't go.
Your vacation, I think the way to think of this is, your vacation is not worth an emergency responder risking their life to help you out of a situation you created. Go, if you're worried about canceling, it's going to cost you something. If you didn't take travel insurance, it's too late now. Obviously, you can't take it after a problem occurs. But if you paid with a credit card for that flight, almost every premium or semi-premium credit card will include some kind of travel coverage as part of its benefits when you use it. So check the small print, and you might find that you're able to cancel completely and it not cost you anything, or barely, maybe it'll cost you $100.
Oh, that's
great. If you're
great.
Worried about the price, the cost, the fees, think about the travel insurance you may not know you have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, Mark, we touched on this at the beginning of our conversation, mm-hmm. something that we've been following, and this is changing all the time. A little while ago, I had a list of the airports in Florida that were closing, already a big list. I guess a last word, and this might have changed, Miami was still open. Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood was still open, but they're all monitoring. I guess they're all thinking that they, you know, who knows, they might have to close depending on the course of the storm right now with Tampa certainly in the bullseye.
Exactly.
If you're flying, what's the best way to get the most current information about whether an airport is open or not?
Well, the transportation.gov, the DOT will keep people updated on that. I would always look at the social media feeds of airports and airlines. Despite the controversy around X, in terms of sort of social activity, businesses still use it as a great quick channel to get accurate information out there. So I would go there. I would go to the Facebook page of any of the airlines, any of the airports. That's a place they know they can instantly real-time update information, and you can trust that information because it is coming directly from the source.
All right, that's good advice because we in the media, we rely on that, so there's a little bit of a lag in terms of the most current information, you know, and again, it's a
exactly.
fluid situation to say the very least. And back on WICC, the Voice of Connecticut on Newsline with me, Bridget Quinn, and Mark Elwood, our favorite travel expert. Mark, great to have you back. So we were talking about what to do if you had plans to travel to Florida, and now with Milton coming, as you've said, Mark, just don't do it. Don't even think about it. Let's talk about other travel plans. And let's say you were looking to get away this fall. And my favorite question for you is always, how much is it going to cost me? How high are airfares in general these days if you were planning a fall vacation?
So can I reframe the question, actually, because I
sure.
think this often is misleading. I think it's people look at airfare prices, and that is the driving factor. And I would always say, look at airfare prices, your accommodation, and what it's going to cost you when you get there. You want to think about the whole cost of a trip. So sure, it might be a little bit more expensive to fly to the west coast of Mexico than to fly down to Georgia, but you could spend far less when you're there. So I always say, sure, flight prices, family visits, whatever, Thanksgiving, things like that. Absolutely, you really have to fixate on the price. When you're thinking about trips, don't get deluded and sort of delayed in making decisions because you just think, gosh, that flight's expensive. Because actually, overall, it may be cheaper to go to Mexico or Europe than to take that domestic trip, which has a cheap flight price attached.
Interesting. So look at sort of, I guess you could call it like a bundle, you know, what the whole package costs.
Totally.
So what's the best way to find a trip like that? I mean, what do you look for first? Do you start with the airfares? Do you go to websites that have these packages? How do you figure out that best bundle?
So I think there's two ways to do that. One, I always love hacking currencies. You have to look at the greenback is quite strong against most of the world's currencies at the moment. It's particularly strong, for example, against the Turkish lira. Turkey has had some economic problems, which means that the lira is very, very, very low against the dollar. Turkish Airlines has, you know, I think more than a dozen hubs in the U.S. Look at that currency. Gosh, by the time you get to Turkey, you're living 5-star on a 2 or 3-star budget. If you want to look more for a package and more domestically, I always think if you go to the website of most major airlines, you will see there's a tab on there that you've probably never noticed is there. And it's the packages. It's American's vacations, Delta vacations, JetBlue's vacations, where the airline bundles a hotel and the flight together. And for quite complicated airline industry reasons, that may well be a real steal at peak season when there are tricky flight prices, those packages may end up being cheaper, flight and hotel combined, than even the flight itself. They're always worth checking, even if you're not looking for a hotel.
Interesting. It almost seems like a virtual travel agent, right? In the old days, we used to go sit down with somebody and say, yeah, give me the best price on going, you know, fill in the blank. And they would kind of, you know, handle all the different facets of travel for you. By the way, are they coming back? I feel like I'm hearing more people anecdotally saying, I use this service or this agent.
I bet they're your fanciest friends, though, aren't they?
Yeah, a couple of them were kind of fancy.
Yeah, because if I was splurging, if I were planning a honeymoon, if I were planning a once-in-a-lifetime trip, or if I wanted to plan a big family get-together, you want to spend the money on a travel agent doing the hard stuff. They essentially do the coordination. They'll get you free upgrades. If you're traveling at the higher end, if you're booking a more expensive room, if there's a lot of you, gosh, that $200 an hour a travel agent might cost, you will reap back tenfold in convenience, freebies, and honestly, the stress of it all coming together. So yes, they are coming back, but I would use them not for that quick weekend getaway. I'd use them for the, wow, I've always wanted to go to Rome. I'm going to blow my socks off. Blow my mind in Rome, please, Mr. or Mrs. Travel Agent.
Okay. I do have some fancy friends. Yeah. I also have some very frugal friends, and I'm pretty frugal myself. you mentioned a moment ago peak travel season. Are we not in that just yet? I mean, is the really the peak travel time, are we coming up on that? Thanksgiving time, that week always seems like a killer week to try to get anything or pay for anything.
We're in that gorgeous Goldilocks season right now, which is the fall, when it's called shoulder season. It's between high and low seasons. So you'll often at this time get cheap prices, but the weather of the good times. Remember, too, that America has a particular rhythm around peak travel. Thanksgiving is only a holiday for us. The rest of the world, it's just some Thursday in November. So sure, you'll have expensive prices domestically. If you want to travel internationally that week, one of the cheapest times to do it. Go to Paris for Thanksgiving, have a little bit of turkey by the Seine, win, win, win. And you'll find that early December, that window between Thanksgiving and Christmas, which the travel industry calls festive, is a real sweet spot for real bargains. Las Vegas, for example, notoriously, if you want a cheap room in Vegas, first couple of weeks of December, gosh, it'll blow your mind how cheap it is.
God, isn't that something? I remember talking with you, I want to say like 2 years ago or a year ago, and you were saying, yeah, this is a good time to go to Paris. And I said, Mark, I'm going to get to Paris. I haven't gotten to Paris yet. But anyway, that's another story about Thanksgiving travel. So you
more
can
for you, more for you.
One of these days. Who knows? So in terms of Thanksgiving, if you didn't book a flight yet, I'm guessing you really need to get going. Does it get more expensive as it gets closer to Thanksgiving if you're not looking for some, you know, more exotic locale and you just want to get from point A to point B domestically to visit family?
Look, you're not going to score that secret bargain Thanksgiving flight now, but there are ways to reduce your costs. Remember, if you can fly indirectly, i.e. you can stop somewhere, you will cut down your price. And what I always remind people, in the winter, try and connect in states where the weather is better, because weather is the biggest problem. So if you take a flight via Chicago in January, you're likelier to have weather hiccups than if you take a flight via Atlanta. It could happen, but Atlanta doesn't get the snow Chicago does. So if you're looking to try and get a bargain on Thanksgiving, route yourself indirectly, but go through the South, go through Dallas, go through Atlanta, any of the hubs that might are more likely to be sunny. That reduces one of the things that could derail you, and that's a big plus.
Oh, that is great advice. I have one of my daughters, I'm trying to lure her home for Thanksgiving from L.A. I'll tell her to make sure, as we start to get into the colder weather, to try to take those southern routes. Great advice. As always, Mark Elwood, fantastic to have you back on Newsline. Make sure you come back again real soon.
Always catch up.
All right.